Good evening and welcome to Radio EduTalk. My name is David Noble in Dalgetty Bay in Scotland, and delighted to welcome to the show this evening Dr. Rebecca Nesbitt, who's going to be talking about citizen science and the present flying ant survey. Good evening, Rebecca. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And this is a pre-record if you're listening on Wednesday evening, or if you're listening to the podcast. But if you have any questions for Rebecca or any comments, then you can get in touch in two ways. You can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something up on Twitter using the hashtag edutalk. And no doubt as the show progresses, you'll get a real flavour of how the Society of Biology and other related organisations are using social media and technology. So there'll be no doubt several other ways that you can get in touch with Rebecca after you've listened to the audio this evening. So Rebecca, would you mind just introducing yourself, your kind of career in academia and education and as a biologist, etc., and then we'll get into talking about, firstly, citizen science?
Yes, absolutely. So I studied for my PhD. I studied butterfly migration, and I know lots of listeners will be familiar with the Painted Lady, which is a butterfly that migrates each year from North Africa and Southern Europe all the way to the UK. So I was really working out how can these insects make such amazing journeys of thousands of kilometres. And when I'd finished my PhD, I moved into science communication and science education. I'm currently lucky enough to be working for the Society of Biology in the communications team. And part of my job is citizen science, running our citizen science projects, particularly the flying ant survey. And citizen science, I think, is slightly misnamed because you would never say citizen music, you'd just say music. This is science where anyone is taking part, and not just someone like me who is paid to do science, but every citizen. And actually, part of my interest in citizen science is as a citizen. I, later on tonight, I should be going out to my shed and identifying moths as a citizen scientist contributing to a science project.
Well, it sounds fascinating, and I'm just wondering, is citizen science is that a kind of long-standing name of a project? I mean, it almost sounds to me as if it's a kind of movement or something that's come out of the literature or practices in years gone by. I mean, it sounds like a wonderful idea. Can you say a bit about its origins?
Yes, and the UK has an amazing history of citizen science, and we have enormous projects like bird ringing. So volunteers put metal rings, trained and licensed volunteers put metal rings on birds' legs, and we scientists are able from that to look at data of bird movement. And we have decades of information on that. And other citizen science projects that have been going on for decades actually include the moth project I'm involved in. That's the Ruffenstead Insect Survey, which has just celebrated its 50-year anniversary, 50 years of volunteers contributing scientific knowledge. But I would say it goes back even further than these formal schemes. If we think of lots of the core scientific discoveries that have been going on, Gregor Mendel, who lots of people will be learning about in school genetics, was a monk. And only more recently has science become the domain of people who have been to university to study science and gone down a very traditional route. But you mentioned that it was a movement, and I really, really think it is. It's a growing movement, and we have DIY biologists, garage biologists, people who are doing their own experiments, even people who are modifying their kitchen appliances to be lab equipment.
Wow, but many of the listeners to EduTalk are based in Scotland and other parts of the United Kingdom. So what kind of projects might some of our colleagues in schools be involved in at the moment, you know, other than the flying ant survey that we're going to come on to shortly?
There's a whole range, and I suspect lots of your viewers will have taken part in the Big Garden Birdwatch from the RSPB, and that is set over one particular weekend where everyone for a set length of time looks out of their window and counts the birds, and the RSPB has got some brilliant data from that front. Other people might be reporting butterfly sightings to Butterfly Conservation. There are also some really good apps for phones now. The Bug Life has recently launched one for recording bees. There's iSpot, which again, and if you were to search iSpot on the Android or Apple App Store, you'd be able to download the app, which also helps with identification. So some of these, actually, they don't take a huge amount of commitment. It just takes you to ask one off, spot a bee, and record it. But one I'm particularly keen on is the UK Ladybird Survey, which is, again, if you spot ladybirds of any species, you just need to record their time and their place and submit it to the National Ladybird Survey, and that's produced some really interesting results.
And you're talking about the masses of data that young people and other citizens are involved in gathering just now, and do young learners actually, are they able to get access to the data in some kind of form later down the line?
That's a very good question, and actually that's something I'm really keen to do with the flying ant data. Is currently we're just processing it, but this will have been the third year of our study, and it's produced some really interesting results, and currently we're just struggling to manage this wonderful amount of data we've collected, but I would really like to make it freely available, and I think particularly freely available to schools, because maths and biology are so intricately linked, and mathematicians have contributed a huge amount to biology, so I would love for more people interested in maths to be able to explore our data.
And coming on to the flying ant survey then, you know, just when I was checking on your website earlier on, you were saying that one of the reasons for doing this survey is that your own research, I think, within the society has shown up some surprising results in recent years. So what were these surprising results, and how did that lead to the idea behind the flying ant survey?
So lots of people have anecdotes about Flying Ant Day. Someone tweeted me recently saying it's always between Wimbledon and the proms. Other people have said, oh, it's always on my sister's birthday. And because it's quite a dramatic spectacle, lots of people had anecdotes about it and about it being on one day. And when we started the Flying Ant Survey and started to study this, we realized that this pattern is much more complex. So our first year was 2012, and we saw one flying ant day all over the UK, Scotland, same day as London. We thought, great, this is our day. And then the weather turned bad, and we still had records coming in, but there had been one main day, and suddenly there was a second day. So where these anecdotes are all, there's a flying ant day, we found two flying ant days. So we went into 2013 thinking that was interesting. Was it just the weather that maybe meant that some ants never got the chance to fly, so had to wait a couple of weeks? But no, 2013 revealed four flying ant days. So this pattern of flying ant emergencies is much more complex than we had thought just from the anecdotes.
And what is it that you're looking for school children to get involved in then?
What would be fantastic is if school children can see flying ants this year and just make a note of where they are, what the weather's like, and the time and the date. So where they are could well be a postcode, or it could be a grid reference, for example. And on our website, which is societyofbiology.org/flyingantsurvey, we've got a chance for people to enter that data. And that would be really great if they could do that. But what would also be really great is if they could help me spread the word. Everyone will have friends and family who might be interested. So if they could let other people know about the survey, and also maybe let them help share how amazing flying ants are. They might have family members who want to pour boiling water on the ant nest, but if anyone could help share that this is a wonderful spectacle and encourage people instead to send in their records, then I'd be really grateful.
And I know it's a very straightforward SurveyMonkey survey that you're using to capture this data, and you've mentioned about some apps that are out there already, but can you say a bit more about how yourself and the society and other organisations are kind of embracing new technologies and including social media? I mean, I've been hearing about this new spider identification app, and I know the Flying Ant Survey has got its own hashtag. So can you give us a flavour about, I suppose, who's behind all this? Is everybody within the society up to speed with technologies, or is it a couple of people that are really driving these kind of forms of engagement?
Yes, technology has made a real difference to us, and I'm sure we wouldn't have been able to do this survey without modern technology. Partly simply just collecting data over the internet means it comes in a manageable format. But also Twitter has been very important to us. We see lots of people using the hashtag flying ants. And these are people who just spotted flying ants and are normally saying, "Ugh, they flew into my mouth when I was cycling." And through us using this flying ants hashtag, we are able to reach more people. We also use the hashtag flying ants survey, and this allows different people who've taken part in the survey to share their experiences. But also it makes it easy for anyone who has a question for me about flying ants to use that hashtag, and I can easily pick up the question and answer it. And I've really enjoyed that. Twitter, I think, is a wonderful way to reach new people and to gain access to people who you would never otherwise have met. So I really enjoy being asked questions that way.
I'm sorry, on you go, Rebecca. Sir.
I was about your question about the app. Yes, we do. We have a spider identification app on both the Android and the Apple Store. And this was a trial run for us. And it was my first experience of working with someone to develop an app. But we reached lots and lots of people that way. And I've also realized from using apps, it's just so convenient, because if I see a spider, I want to then and there look up a picture. I don't want to think, oh, tomorrow I'll switch my computer on and try and remember it. Because with identifying wildlife, unless you're looking at it, it can be pretty hard to remember exactly what it was like.
Yeah, and just going back to the flying ant survey, I mean, many teachers are busy and the curricula is busy. And are there other resources out there that a teacher could actually expand upon this research and the activities that the young people are involved in to make it more of a kind of prolonged project?
Yes, absolutely. So on our website, we have quite a lot of information. We have, for example, a video of our collaborator, Professor Adam Hart from the University of Gloucestershire, who some people might remember as presenter of Planet Ant on the BBC. He's got a video explaining the results, probably more suitable for older children. But there are also lots of different links to fact sheets and to blog posts with information. So we've had teachers, for example, doing a poster advertising the Flying Ant Survey and getting pupils to read some of our resources, do a bit of research, find some interesting facts about flying ants and make a poster to put up around the school. And I think that's absolutely brilliant. For someone who's maybe teaching younger pupils, we have a colouring in ant flying a plane with a few facts on the back of that about flying ants. So that can be a fun end of term activity.
Yep, sounds great. And I mean, it seems to me that there's various levels of involvement that young people, I suppose, just in their home lives, can get involved in and through to their work within the classroom. So, is that what you find through talking to teachers and pupils, that some are happy to get outdoors and just gather the data and transmit that to yourself, whereas others want to take their learning a stage further?
Yes, definitely. And I think a very high proportion of biologists, certainly of ecologists, can look back to their childhood and think about a particular species or a particular event, whether they went pond dipping or they found some caterpillars. And these are really... that's often where passions for biology start. So anyone who is taking their pupils outside, I think, can be very fascinating for them. And also people at home who are parents who are encouraging their children to be very careful in the way they look at what's in their garden, look at the world around them, and report that through any of these citizen science schemes, then I think that can be a really valuable learning tool.
And I'd really like to hear a bit about this bio art attack competition that's been launched. I'm conscious I maybe promote this in one way, being based in Scotland, that we are schools are finishing either at the end of this week or the end of next week, so it might be worth giving the kind of details of the competition that schools maybe might then share the competition details for pupils maybe to work on over the actual summer holiday. So what's bio art attack all about, and how can people get involved and meet this closing date, which I think is at the end of the first week back after the Scottish school holidays?
Yes, absolutely, and I feel this is a good end of term project as everyone's winding down. We came up with the idea because actually, even at a very young age, people will say, I'm good at science, I'm not good at art, I'm good at art, I'm not good at science. And that divide is just such a shame, because they both, science and art, take great creativity. And so we have launched a bio art attack competition for anyone under the age of 18. And we're asking people to make a collage, a sculpture, a model on any biological theme. So this could be raiding the science lab for equipment to build a picture of a microscope. It could be going outside to collect some leaves to build a picture of a butterfly or some other wildlife. Or it could just be going through your contents of your kitchen, some egg boxes, some cereal boxes, and using those to create a model inspired by any aspect of biology. And we're asking people to use time-lapse photography or just to take digital pictures of their creations and sending them to us. Again, our URL for this is www.societyofbiology.org/bioartattack. And we've got some prizes on offer. We're also going to be putting them online, and there'll be a People's Choice Award, so you can vote for the best. And yeah, we're just really enjoying the very creative things that students are sending in, and we would love to see more coming in from Scotland.
And Just finally, I don't like this kind of divide between formal and informal learning, but what else is there that we should be looking out for, either in the natural world? What kind of big events or might be happening over the summer? What should we be looking out for in our communities and our gardens? And also, are there any other projects or learning opportunities that we should keep an eye on the Society of Biology website for?
Absolutely. I'm glad you've asked this because it's actually National Insect Week at the moment. The Royal Entomological Society have put on a week's worth of events, and their events calendar actually goes well beyond this week. So if you Google National Insect Week, that should give some good ideas. At the Society of Biology, again, we have events pages, and we have regional branches, including a great branch in Scotland who will be putting on events. So if you search our events pages, hopefully you'll find something near you. The RSPB's Big Garden Bird Watch, again, I can definitely recommend that. And also BioBlitzes. I'm actually part of a BioBlitz that's being organised on the 5th of July in London, but I realise that most of your listeners won't be able to get to that. But there's probably one locally if you Google BioBlitz, and this is you get a set length of time to identify as many species as possible. So we will have someone who's emptied a moth trap. We will have, I'm going to walk a butterfly transect with people. We're going to have our bat detectors out in the evening. So BioBlitzes are just events in a particular area which are a real focus on species identification, and there are always experts on hand to help anyone out and give them a chance to learn a bit more about wildlife.
Oh, sounds terrific. So a busy summer holidays ahead for everybody, hopefully.
I hope so.
It's been great having you on the show, Rebecca, and best wishes. And just before you go, I mentioned the way that people can get in touch with EduTalk as ever, but any other kind of ways of contacting you that we haven't covered?
Yes, absolutely. On Twitter, I am at Rebecca Nesbitt, and that's Nesbitt with one T. I also have an email address. I'm Rebecca Nesbitt, or one word, again, with one T, at societyofbiology.org. The Society of Biology has a Facebook group, and also we have more information on our website, for example, careers resources, and people can contact me that way. I'm on Twitter. I'm also at society_biology.
Yeah. That's great, Rebecca. Thanks again for giving up your valuable time this evening to appear on EduTalk.
Thank you for inviting me.